The following announcement has been paid for by Perched on the Top Rope.
All right, let me tell you something. There's only one Joel Goodhart, and there's only one Perched at the Top Rope. And this is an example of one and one equals one. Let's hit it, Lee.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Perched on the Top Rope. And as you heard from that show opener, ladies and gentlemen, Joel Goodhart. Joel, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Now I'm on with you. How bad can it be?
Hey, it can't be that bad. So I got to ask, I was just recently at Philadelphia for WrestleMania. How did you become a fan of professional wrestling?
All right, well, there's your first 30-minute answer. This goes back. My father took me to the matches when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I went to the Philadelphia Arena back in the old WWF days. I happened to see Spiros Arion, who was my man. I always liked the bad guys. So Spiros Arion, I saw him there. I saw George Animal Steel take on Bruno Sammartino. I saw a match where Bruno and George Steel wrestled onto Market Street in Philadelphia. Bruno took George Steel, slammed him on a Gimmick car, didn't know it at the time. Okay, wrestled back, and my father took me to the matches. I mean, that's how this whole thing started. I was never in love with wrestling, okay? But it was one of those things, you know, baseball, football, basketball in Philadelphia, you've got all the good teams. Back in the day, they weren't the good teams. But the neat thing with wrestling was it was year-round. It was once a month, once a quarter, whatever it was. It wasn't seasons. You didn't have the home team versus the away team. It was just something that I quickly got affection to.
Oh, that is awesome. And you bring up Bruno Sammartino, a WWE Hall of Famer. I'm going to bounce around. What was it like to work with his son, David?
How about ask me how was it like to work with Bruno?
What was it like to work with Bruno also?
Okay. So Bruno, actually, I got started with one of the reasons I got started with Bruno. My former partner, Carmella, was very close with Bruno and Dominic DiNucci. And when we had the Squared Circle, the original wrestling store, first one anywhere, we had at our grand opening both Bruno Sammartino and Dominic DiNucci. And one of the first wrestling cards that I promoted at Temple University, I had as the main event David Sammartino, managed by Bruno, up against Larry Zbyszko, managed by Paulie Dangerously. Okay. And I tried desperately to get those guys to do something in the ring together, and they just both resisted. They both resisted. But working with Bruno, true professional. Working with David, I had no problem with David. I mean, David got his reputation later on in the years. I mean, Ron Shaw, who was one of my co-owners of the Ringmasters Wrestling School, Ron Shaw was the one that pinned David Sammartino at the Philadelphia Spectrum. That's one of those videos that's on YouTube if you ever want to watch it. But I worked with the Sammartino family. They were phenomenal. Another story, if you really want a story. The first show that I did with Bruno in the corner of David, Bruno lived outside near Pittsburgh. And back in the day, you were able to walk up to the airlines. I mean, today you have to go through TSA and, you know, the whole nine yards. But what happened was Bruno had a 5 o'clock flight back to Pittsburgh, and my show started at 1, and they were in the main event, and they came on, give or take, 3:30, quarter to 4. And he wanted to get back to the airport to fly home that night. Anyway, long story long, right there in the back of the dressing room. Now, keep in mind, anybody who was working on that card, Junkyard Dog, Paul Jones, I can go down the list. None of them knew who I was. I was a checkbook, but they didn't know what my credibility was or wasn't. Bruno Sammartino stood right in the middle of the locker room and said as loud as he could possibly be, "Hey, Joel, send me my check. I'm going to go catch a plane." As soon as he did that, he put me over with all the boys, They all knew that my checks were going to clear. They knew my pay was good. Bruno was in my corner, and the rest is history. So, no, Bruno, class guy to work for, no question about it.
That's incredible. And that actually kind of goes with a question I do have. But first, I want to ask, when did the light bulb go off to form Tri-State Wrestling Alliance?
You know, that's a really good, it's a good question. Unfortunately, I have to give you a long-winded answer, okay? When I got connected to Carmella and Paul, my partners, they turned out to be my partners. One of the things that Paul had said to me was, if you ever need tickets to anything, Broadway shows, concerts, I sell tickets on the side. I hawk them. Just tell me what you want. You'll pay a little extra, but I'll get you good seats. 3-4 weeks later, he calls me and says, by the way, what are you doing on Saturday night? And I was separated at the time. I said, I have nothing specific. Why? What do you have in mind? He says, you want to go to the matches with me? Well, again, I hadn't been to the wrestling matches since I was a kid. I said, sure. And it was when the NWA was coming to Philadelphia. So he got us in. And there we are sitting in the front row. Don't ask me how he pulled that off. And I'm sitting right in front of Rock and Roll Express against the Midnight Express, the Road Warriors. I'm watching some stiff action. I hate the WWF. I always hated the WWF. You were in Philadelphia to see WrestleMania. I avoided Philadelphia. I didn't want to be anywhere near WrestleMania. Anyway, one of the things that you learn in this business is if you don't put your step forward, someone's going to stamp all, just tread all over you. So I'm sitting at the matches after 2 or 3 months with Paul on the front row, and there's a guy walking around the ring in a suit and tie. And he just looked out of place. I mean, wrestling is not a suit and tie crowd. And I had to go up to the guy and said, look, you don't know me, I don't know you, but I'm curious, who are you? Now, he has since passed away, but his name was Elliot Murnick. And he said, my name is Elliot Murnick, and I'm Crockett's people in Philadelphia. I said, well, you're the promoter. Good to know you. This is a phenomenal product. It's fantastic. He says to me, why don't you meet me back at the Marriott afterwards? We'll have a drink. Well, I don't drink, but I said, I'll tell you what, I'll meet you back there. I'll get a Diet Coke. So I meet him back at the Marriott. What do I know from the Marriott? I get there, there's 300 people there. Okay, I mean, the word was out that this is where the, okay. So I meet him in the bar. We sit down and he asked me about my background and I asked him about his. And it just so happens, I'm Jewish and he was Jewish. And you can't find two Jews in wrestling anywhere, okay? So I said, we hooked up. So one thing led to the other. And a couple months later, he happened to say to me, I have a question for you. I come up to Philadelphia once a month to promote the show, but I take my boat up. He lives in North Carolina. I take my boat up. I don't even know how long that takes. I don't fly. I don't drive. I love the boat. And he says to me, quote, would you mind being my eyes and ears in Philadelphia? I did it. That did it. That started my promotional career. I mean, I can go into more detail than that, but that started it. And anyway, one thing led to the other. He wanted to do a show outside of Philadelphia. He wanted me to go find a building. I found the building. We promoted a show. And that was the beginning of beginning of the end, if you want to call it that.
Now, I got to ask, now knowing when the light bulb went off for Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, when did the envision of the more hardcore extreme style of wrestling come into play for you?
Well, I'll tell you what, you jumped ahead a little bit. When I first started promoting for Crockett and for Elliot, well, more specifically for Elliot Murnick than for Crockett, I started running some shows at Temple University. And the first show that I ran, the one that I had Paulie Dangerously and Bruno Sammartino, was not a TWA show. It was just an independent promotion show. but I had a radio show in Philadelphia called Wrestling Radio. And Wrestling Radio, in hindsight, was my television. I had 29,000 listeners per quarter hour on Saturday morning at 7 o'clock on a major station in Philadelphia, WIP, if you're familiar with the Philadelphia area. And one thing led to the other, and I started getting the bug up me about running a show or shows and having some continuity. And I knew enough about wrestling to realize you can't just keep flying guys in. You got to build up a program. You got to build up some the good guy, bad guy, the heel face. And one thing led to the other, and I started running shows at Temple University. And I decided to create an organization called Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. I knew I was only going to wrestle in three states, Pennsylvania, Jersey, and Delaware. As I turned out, I wrestled in four because I did one show in Maryland. But basically, Pennsylvania, Jersey, and Delaware. And I went out and bought a belt, and I got a legitimate belt, not the crap that you see half of these federations use. I went out and spent a lot of money on a belt. It was the belt that when I went under, ECW eventually used it as their belt. Okay, so it was a legitimate belt. And one thing the story here is everything leads to another, which leads to another, leads to another. But when I started the TWA, one of the things that we did a lot of is we worked with the magazines. And I was very fortunate being outside of Philly. Bill Apter lived down the road from me. Well, when I say down 10, 15 miles from me, George Napolitano lived in the area. Bob Smith used to come down from New York, okay, for PWI. He came down to my shows. And here I go. I announce the formation of the TWA. I announce the belt, and I take out the belt, and I show the belt. I literally, this is on YouTube, so you can validate it. I walk out of the ring, and Bill Apter meets me at the steps. And he says, I want you to know the PWA is recognizing the TWA belt. Well, that was instant credibility. I mean, God bless Bill Apter. He started it all, but instant credibility. So the TWA was formed. It was, I had no idea where I was going with it. The flavor of the matches, to be honest, is what I wanted to see. Okay, I didn't pick hardcore because I thought it was good business, because I think an argument could be made it was bad business. Okay, but I coined a phrase, and nobody, I didn't copy it from anybody, but I coined a phrase that everybody who comes to my matches at some point, they're sitting in the front row. Okay, I remember going to Crockett shows and sitting in the front row, and I used to see the hard hitting of Midnight Express against Rock and Roll, and the slaps were hitting, and Flair would slap, and that you saw the sweat fly like crazy. I wanted to see that, but I wanted that for the back rows too. And that's where I came up with the Attitude Era. I didn't call it that at the time, but I wanted everybody at my show to go home saying, this is different. This is real. Okay. And so that's how it all started. I mean, I can't tell you that by design. I mean, I always tell this story. I used to read these magazines all the time and look for guys that I never saw up here. So I used to love Southern wrestling. I have Memphis wrestling, Georgia, Florida. And if you ever watch any of my matches between Jerry Lawler and Kevin Sullivan, you see that flavor. Well, I always wanted to see Adrian Street, exotic Adrian Street, on a show. The problem was I actually got a hold of him through Austin Idol. And he said to me, Joel, sorry, but no go. I never go north of the Mason-Dixon line. Well, that's going to eliminate all my matches. So I found out something that he actually liked. I found somebody in Pittsburgh that did it. I got him to come up for him for the guy in Pittsburgh, and he drove across the state to come to my show. And so I had a match on one of my cards at Exotic Adrian Street against Boogie Woogie Man Jimmy Valiant. It was the third match on the card. I had Exotic Adrian Street and Miss Linda plus Boogie. So I had three flights from down south plus free talents. And nobody, I can tell you, there isn't a single person today that will ever admit that they bought a ticket to my show to see that match. Okay, so I was a fan first. Now, good news is I was a fan first. The bad news is I was a fan first. Okay, and it just, you know, everybody takes on whatever bug they get, whether it's doing a podcast, whether it's doing wrestling, whether it's managing, whether it's being a referee, whether it's being a ring announcer. You know what? Everybody finds a role for themselves, and then they just run with it.
That is well said.
Well, I get, you know, I have come across, look, I've been, I mean, I haven't been in the business straight through since 86. But from 86 to 92, and then from 92 to 2007, I did not, I'm sorry, 2009, I did not watch a show, go to a show, read a magazine, or read a newsletter. I mean, I just walked away from the business completely. Okay, but you find your niche.
So you stopped watching in 2007. What was the first thing you watched?
Well, here's what, it was actually 2009. I got a phone call. I'm in the financial services business, and I've been doing it now for 48 years. Anyway, I get a phone call in my office, and my secretary gives me the phone. She doesn't know who it is. And I answer the phone, and it's Michael Bruno, his real name is Mike Tartaglia. And Michael Bruno, as it turned out, started wrestling in my wrestling school. Anyway, he calls me on the phone in 2009, and he says to me on the phone, he says, look, I'm going to start up my own promotion, meaning him. Do you mind if I use the letters TWA? And I said, well, look, I never copyrighted it. I never registered it. It's been 17 years. What am I going to do, say no? So I go ahead, go use it. He uses it for three shows and then kills it. And I still, to this day, know Mike very well, and I talk to Mike all the time. He didn't tell me anything about the fact he was going to go buy the ECWA, a local group in Delaware, merge it against the TWA, have matches against each other, and basically the ECWA was going to win. Okay? So I let him use the TWA initials, and he promptly killed it. Okay? But that's what got the bug going again.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, when it came to the extreme side of TWA, you had mentioned how Bruno had really stood up for you in that essence. Who were some of the guys in the back that were supporting the change in the style of wrestling?
Well, I'll tell you, it was the local guys more than, but to be honest, I mean, the Jerry Lawlers, the Austin Idols, they did their Memphis style wrestling. But I hooked into some great, great guys. The late Larry Winters, DC Drake, Johnny Hotbody, Tony Stetson. I mean, I can go down the list. And as I'm sure you're aware, we are doing some things coming up that I want to spend a little bit of time on today. But the neat thing was that the local guys are the ones that were working for the paycheck, but we're looking to build a reputation. And the magazines were at my matches. And so the Larry Winters and DC Drakes and Johnny Hotbodies and Tony Stetsons, they all worked before me. Okay. Now, Sandman came out of my school. JT Smith came out of my school. Okay. Glenn Osborne came out of my school. Jimmy Jannetty came out of my school. I can go down the list. And so they just took on the attitude, and they just knew I was the king of the gimmick matches. One of my matches I had was the City of Brotherly Hate match. As you know, Philadelphia is the City of Brotherly Love match. I came up with the City of Brotherly Hate match. I came up with the reverse steel cage battle royal, 20 guys outside the ring, and the first one to get in the ring was the winner. I had a last bleed battle royal with 20 guys in it, which basically meant that everybody was going to see 19 bleeders. because the only guy who didn't bleed was the guy that was the winner. Okay. So I think it was part of me just developing my style as I was doing it. And keep in mind, being in the Philadelphia market, I was up against Vince, who obviously was the Spectrum, and being in Philadelphia the whole time. Crockett was coming into Philadelphia, and there were two shows that I did at the Philadelphia Civic Center that we actually beat the Crocketts, okay, in terms of attendance. But it was just a matter of me putting a foot to the pedal, and just, if I wasn't going to develop my, I didn't want to give people more of the same. They didn't need me for that. I had to come up with something a little different.
And it worked. And, you know, while we're on the past of TWA, let's talk about the future, because yesterday you had made an announcement that there is going to be a TWA reunion show on September 28th. Can we hear a little more about that?
Okay. So here's I'll give you the, again, unfortunately, I have a story. I get a phone call a couple months ago from a fellow who I know, you know, Bay Ragney, who used to be Chubby Dudley and ECW. Bay calls me up, and I knew Bay because Bay trained at Ringmasters Wrestling School. He was supposed to make his debut when I went under. Okay. Anyway, long story short, he calls me up and says, look, and he used some colorful language. I won't use it because I'm not sure who's listening to the show here. But he says, I'm looking to get a banner put up in the ECW arena, the 2300 arena. You know, they have the banners with Todd Gordon and all these other names up. I want a banner put up there with five names on it. This is him talking. He said, I want the late Larry Winters, DC Drake, Tony Stetson, Johnny Hotbody, and Joel Goodhart. You guys are what made put Philadelphia on the map, et cetera, et cetera. Well, he started a campaign on Facebook, and he got the 2300 arena to agree that if he got 1,000 signatures, they would put a banner up. Well, we're currently at about 550 signatures. Okay. And I know Bay keeps going online telling everybody, if everybody who signed would get one more person, we'd have our 1,000 signatures. Well, anyway, when he called me up on that, I started to think, and I thought out loud, and Bay will attest to this. I thought out loud, I said, you know what? I'm willing to do one more show. Ric Flair had his last match. Sting had his last match. ELO is currently touring the country with their last shows. You know what? I never had an opportunity to have my last show. So I came up with the name right then and there, One and Done. I said, tell you what we're going to do. We're going to put together a show called One and Done. We'll call the various buildings in the area. I used to run at the Philadelphia Civic Center that's no longer. I used to run at McGonigal Hall Temple University that's no longer. And I'm thinking, okay, what can we do? So I called up, just for the hell of it, I called the 2300 Arena. And the fellow answers the phone, his name is Roger. And I happen to say, Roger, you don't know who I am. My name is Joel Goodhart. He says, yes, I do. I know who you are. So I said, okay. So I said, here's what I want to do. I want to do one more show. And I don't know what it takes to get into the 2300 Arena. What's it take? He says, pick a date. Literally, pick a date. So I looked at the calendar, and I wanted to do it far enough in advance. So I picked May 3rd, 2025. Okay? And he sends me a contract for the building with the money, the whole nine yards. So I suddenly got the bug up my ass again to go do one more show. And if not for Bay Ragney calling me up regarding that damn show, that banner of his. So now watch it. I have a list here. This is my only cheat sheet I've got for you. I quickly get a hold of a lot of my TWA guys. I'm figuring, look, that was 33 years ago. God knows I'm going to find everybody. God knows if any of these people even still care. Okay. So there's no specific order. Okay, but I'm going to mention some names. Every one of these people have agreed to be at the May 3rd show. Okay, so Donnie Allen, and I started to do this in alphabetical order. Donnie Allen, who was a handler for DC Drake. Okay, so Donnie Allen's going to be there. Bob Ortiz, who was a ring announcer for me and sat on my front row at all my shows, was the ring announcer for ECW. He's going to be the ring announcer for this card. Ernesto Benfica, who trained at my school, okay, who's a resident of South Philadelphia, now he's in Bucks County, but he's agreed to be there. Breaker Morant. Breaker wrestled in the latter portion of the TWA. And there's a story behind Breaker, which I'll give you in a minute. Michael Bruno, the fellow that called me in 2009, who was a hitman, he used to team with Tony Stetson. He's going to be in attendance. DC Drake, and DC was one of my lead heels. All right. DC lives up in the Rhode Island, New England area. He's had health histories galore. Every one of my guys has health histories. I have a health history that I don't even want to bore you to death with, but DC Drake is going to be there. John Finnegan, who was my lead referee, who was then the lead referee with ECW, he's going to be there. Johnny Hotbody, who was one of my lead heels, okay, who I found in Atlantic City, 60 miles down the road, he's going to be in attendance. Jimmy Jannetty, who lives in Florida, okay, came into my Ringmasters Wrestling School and learned there. He's going to be in attendance. Michael Keener, who's one of the referees, is going to be at our show. Blue Meanie. Now, the Blue Meanie, interesting story. Blue Meanie started not with TWA, although he appeared on a couple of TWA cards. When we had the Squared Circle Fan Club, which is a whole nother show into itself, Blue Meanie was a member of the Squared Circle Fan Club. Okay, so he's going to be there. Glenn Osborne is going to be there in attendance. Tony Stetson, one of the lead heels, he's going to be there. Bay Ragni, who you know, Bay Chubby Dudley. Now, he never wrestled for TWA, but he trained at Ringmasters Wrestling School. Jim Molyneux, who was also came out of my rest Ringmasters Wrestling School, though he had ref before me. Cujo the Hellhound, who was a wrestler on the TWA show. Rich Engling, who was one of my referees back in the original day. So those are the names that I came up with just on my sheet here. As I got prepared for you, I just wanted to have a cheat sheet. They all said, yes, they're coming. So I said, okay, now, most of these guys couldn't get in the ring. They can't get up the steps, let alone get in the ring. Okay. So we're going to have a regular show. We're not announcing any matches yet. I will say that the show is going to be on May 3rd. We are going to have tickets go on sale on October 5th coming up. That's Saturday. I think it's Saturday. The tickets are going to go on sale for two things. One is the show itself, which will start at night. And then we're also going to have what we call a WrestleCon. Can't have a WrestleCon. Everybody's used that name. So we're going to have a WrestleCon. And again, we're not going to mention any names yet, but all of the TWA guys will be there, plus a lot of people that wrestled on the TWA shows, et cetera, et cetera. More details to follow. This super card, these are expensive propositions. So what we're doing, the front row, there's 80 seats on the front row, and they're $100 a ticket. There's 75, 80 seats on the second row, they're $75 a ticket. And then the rest of the building is reserved seating at $35 a ticket and general admission for $25 a ticket. Now, all you'll have to do on October 5th is go to 2300arena.com and put your order in for tickets. Now, my hope is that we have a sellout. Okay, what's going to be amazing is it's going to be a night of nostalgia. If you are a hardcore wrestling fan, you're going to want to be there. If you like the new crap that you watch on television, I don't know. Okay, it is what it is. But if you want to see here's what's amazing. We're going to have, hopefully, we're going to have the banner drop that night. Okay, don't know if we have the 1,000 signatures. We're going to hope. We're going to have a 10-bell salute. for all the wrestlers that work for me that have since passed away. It is scary. We're almost at 40 people. Okay. It's just, and some of the names are Terry Funk, Kevin Sullivan. I mean, I can go down the list. We're going to have some phenomenal matches. We're going to have some typical Joel Goodhart matches, some gimmick matches, if you will. More details to follow. We'll certainly leave pipe you in as we announce our matches. Let's just say that if you're a hardcore wrestling fan, where you're going to want to be on May 3rd of 2025 is at the 2300 Arena all day. Okay? You'll love it. It's going to be exciting. I'm telling you, here I am in October, and I can't wait. I can't wait. It's driving me nuts. I got to wait till, I don't know why I picked May 3rd, but we're going to do May 3rd, 2025. You got to be there.
I know where I'm going to be May 3rd. All right. I was a huge fan of ECW. I was like in middle school, and it was hard to find on TV for me in upstate New York. Like, it would be on the MSG network, but it would be, you know, some weekends it was on Saturday at 3 in the morning. Sometimes it was on Sunday at 6 a.m. You just had to find when it was on. And that was the only issue I had. And that was the 96, 97, I believe.
Yeah, now, I'm not exactly sure where in New York you are. How far are you from Troy, New York?
So I'm in Oswego. I believe Troy is...
It's outside Albany.
Yeah, it's like 3.5 hours, maybe.
Okay. All right. Because that was the one time I was in North New York, if you will. I happened to go to the Clash of the Champions where they had Flair and Funk in an I Quit match. Okay, and we had a bus. We took a bus up there. We sold 50 tickets to that show, and the Squared Circle Fan Club was at that show. Okay, so you're North and West.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I'm right on Lake Ontario. Across from me is Ontario, Canada.
Oh, so it's nice and cold up there.
Oh yeah, and it's interesting because the WWF used to run shows at the college here at SUNY Oswego from, I want to say like 76, 77 to maybe 82.
Okay.
And they did them at, it was called Laker Hall. And it was the hockey rink. But back then, it was like the old school hockey rinks where it's just a big old wooden building and just heaters projected up top. And if you didn't stand in the right spot, you weren't getting heat.
Well, but, you know, see, that's what made wrestling back in the day.
Yeah.
It was the ambiance. It was the ambiance. Here's one suggestion for you. I don't know if you'd be willing to do this or not. If you know a lot of hardcore wrestling fans up that way, why not put together a bus trip to the May 3rd day? Okay. Come down in the morning, get there for the con, be there for the matches at night. Oh, my God. You'll have plenty to talk about on the ride home.
Hey, you ready for this? I own a bus company.
No.
My father and I started it in 2003, and that's exactly what we do. We do bus shuttles for college nightlife, and we also do concert trips, sporting trips, weddings, wine tours, you name it. You know, we do it. So you just put a light bulb in my head. So thank you.
I'll tell you, I'm going to say from 87 to 91. I'll bet you I did 10 to 12 bus tours a year. We had a company that we worked with called David Tours. I don't know if you know them or not, but they had the buses had video screens. And so the wrestling fans would watch. When we went to Troy, New York, we had a 5.5 hour ride. I bought all the Japan tapes. We watched 5.5 hours of matches going up. 5.5 matches coming home, okay, plus the matches at the show. I mean, if you want to work something out, feel free to give me a call. We'll work something out.
Yeah, definitely. I will definitely try and work something out with that.
Yeah.
Now, we've dug just a fraction into the history of Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. Have you ever thought about writing an autobiography?
Well, let's just say I love you. I did not give you that task, but I'm 95% done. It's not an autobiography, it's a book on the
Okay.
TWA, my top 10 matches of the TWA. It sounds crazy. It's not about me. I mean, I was the wallet, if you will, but I was the super fan. I mean, in hindsight, look, I kid everybody. When I did my shows, here you are 34 years later, and still talking about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Cactus Jack got put on the map by me. He was wrestling before me. I just took it to another level. Okay. Todd Gordon came out of, he was an advertiser on my radio show. And from that, he was the wallet that created ECW. Okay, so I think it's fair to say without me, there would have been no Todd. Without me, there would have been no ECW. Quite frankly, without me and Carmella and Paul, her husband, there wouldn't have been a TWA. Okay, if not for the radio show, and again, how all this stuff, I mean, I could take hours. But I made my own breaks, but a lot of the breaks found me, and what's interesting about the wrestling business, there are very few straight arrows. Everybody seems to be out to get themselves, whatever it is, put them over. That's not me. And everybody knew my reputation. Bruno put me on the map. Okay. And as I built my shows and Napolitano took his pictures and Bill Apter gave me the push that I needed to get regarding the belts. Ric Flair came and did a dinner of mine, which is on YouTube if you want to go watch it. I got put on the map because I was aggressive, okay? And I was able to pay guys to come in and do something that nobody else, they didn't, everybody else wanted to do for nothing.
Yeah,
Okay?
now
So.
you worked with so many legends. I'm just gonna list off a few: Bob Orton, Abdullah the Butcher, The Sheik, Sabu, Terry Funk, Kevin Sullivan. At any point, bringing in all, and there's a lot more. At any point, had the NWA or WWF at the time, felt like any threat towards the company that you were becoming bigger and could, become even bigger than what was going on?
I would like to think I was, but here's the reality. Think about this one. TBS bought the NWA, WCW. They had billions and billions of dollars, and they couldn't cut it. Okay. So the one thing I learned was, in hindsight, if I would have stayed small, stayed regional, had my local guys and maybe one name once in a while come in, I'd probably still be in the damn business. Okay. Now, I have another list. Okay. You tell me, wait. You tell me what's the common denominator on this list. Okay. There
Okay.
is one common denominator. And I'll go down the list real quick, and this is no specific order. Kevin Sullivan, Curry Von Erich, Terry Funk, Chris Adams, Bam Bam Bigelow, the original Sheik, Bulldog Brower, Dr. Death Steve Williams, Buddy Landell, Buddy Rogers, Exotic Adrian Street, Luna Vachon, Woman, Wahoo McDaniel, Bruno Sammartino, Dominic DiNucci, the Mighty Igor, Superstar Billy Graham, Animal and Hawk the Road Warriors, Virgil, Bruiser Brody, Kamalu the Ugandan Giant, Owen Hart, Terry Gordy, Ivan Koloff, Eddie Gilbert, Tommy Rogers, Iron Mike Sharp, Bobby Eaton, and Gary Hart. What's the common denominator?
EWA.
No, they're all dead.
Oh.
That's a list of the deceased. Okay. That's scary. I could write a book on stories of each one of these guys. All right. And what's amazing is as we're going through the book and as we're trying to build up toward the show, when we have a 10 bell salute, those are the names, and if not more, those are the names of the people in the 10 bell salute. Okay. So we either are going to have 10 bells for each name, or we'll be there all day, or we're going to have 10 bells for all.
Yeah.
Okay. Every one of those are deceased. And it's amazing to me because when I started to write the book 5 years ago, 6 years ago, the list was shorter. And then every once in a while, the news comes out. Kevin Sullivan passes, this one passes away, that one passes away. It's ridiculous. But all those appeared on a TWA or Joel Goodhart show.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Trump-endorsed MAGA extremist Bernie Moreno says he wants to move Ohio forward. He wants to make America great again. For whom? For people of color? For black people? Nah. Moreno is just looking out for himself and his white supremacist MAGA buddies. He doesn't believe in multicultural America and equality for all. His own company has a long history of being sued for discrimination. He even called for reparations for white people and is firmly against inclusion and diversity programs. If elected, Moreno will rubber stamp Trump's radical 2025 and roll back policies that'll directly harm black families, our finances, jobs, social security, and health care. And he'll turn back the clock on our civil rights. Moreno thinks white supremacy will make America great again. Real talk, Moreno was not for us and will never look out for us. We must re-elect Sherrod Brown, who's a champion for our community and all Ohioans. Vote to secure your rights and your future. Vote for Sherrod Brown, November 5th.
Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Some point.
Yeah, that's scary, alarming.
Well, you know, this goes back to I got out of business in 1992, 32 years ago. Okay? 32 years is a long time. And, you know, wrestlers died at a relatively young age to begin with. Now, I didn't include Ted Petty, who was the cheetah kid for me, Rocco Rock and Ted and whatever for ECW. I mean, I can go down. It's ridiculous. I see in red, Larry Winters. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. My guys. It's just scary. Very scary.
Yeah, that really is. One question I do like to ask.
Yeah.
Anyone who's ever worked with Owen Hart. I get a lot of people who have worked with Owen on the show. And he was my favorite wrestler growing up. So this is more of like a personal question for me. What was it like to book Owen and how did that happen?
Well, it's interesting. Again, that's a show unto itself. I was trying to put together a deal with Japan. Okay. And as it turned out, New Japan was the one that I started communicating with me. And I actually suggested to New Japan that on every one of my super shows, I would bring in a New Japan talent and put them up against an American talent that they knew the style. Owen Hart was put into a ring. As it turned out, you can see it on YouTube. The ring rope actually broke during the matches. Talk about bad timing. That match, we had, our crowd was a bunch of what you and I would probably call smart marks. People that think they know, okay. At the end of the match, and you see it on YouTube, when Owen Hart pins him, Owen Hart gets a standing ovation. The Japanese wrestler, Iizuka, got a standing ovation. They did the bow, the traditional bow to each other. They shook each other's hands, raised each other's arms. The crowd responded the way they needed to wrestle, okay? The match was phenomenal. Owen was great to work with. This is before his Blue Blazer days, and this was me. I hate to say it, my reputation, it was easy. When I finally got him on the phone, and when New Japan kind of suggested the match with Owen, I called Owen. He said yes. He didn't hesitate. Okay? And he was flying in from Canada. The Japanese wrestler was flying in from Japan. It was an expensive match. Okay? It was so expensive that you got to be an idiot to do it, which is why I did it. Okay? And to answer your question, as professional as it could be, when he was in the back in the locker room, you know, I remember a little bit of the conversation we had. He shook my hand. He thanked me for giving him the – and he knows it, Bill. After he was there, and George Napolitano was there, and Bob Smith was there. And he knew, and he got press on that thing. And I will tell you that others have said it. I'll never say it. Cactus Jack made millions of dollars in this business because I gave him a push. Now, he made it on his own. I'll never say that he didn't. But when he put me in his book, okay, have a fine day. I'm in that book on 13 pages by name. Okay, how many times do you get to talk to somebody who's been on a New York Times bestseller? And I can prove it, okay? But Cactus had a monster push because of me. Eddie Gilbert hated the big boys, hated WCW, hated WWF. But he made a lot of money in Memphis and all over the place because of the push. Okay, again, he still did what he had to do. He's still the one that drove the car over Jerry Lawler. Okay, but it, you know, these guys got to know that if they got to be on a TWA show, that was taking it to the next level. And so, working for Owen Hart, long with answer to your short question, phenomenal job. He was the one. I can say this. He was the one wrestler, maybe because it was sudden, but when he died, it was on the news that day. I was really upset. You know, others have died because they were sick or whatever the case is, but his was just a tragedy. But I'm still convinced, even though he dropped 80 feet, the only reason he dropped 80 feet is because he was working for Vince. People don't drop 80 feet not working for Vince. You know, it was a circus act. My opinion, and I'll never be a fan of the WWE. Never. I don't know if that's good or bad, but you want to know something? All of those guys, all the women made it working their way up through the independent ranks. They really did. Okay? And you look back now, the territories and the independents are what built this business. You know, Vince took it to the nth degree and made $1 billion. Okay? But these guys all, hey, I know the story of Kamala. Okay? And when he worked for me, in an outdoor show in 100-degree temperature. It was him against Ken Patera. And Kamala was barefoot. He couldn't even stand in the ring. It was so damn hot. Okay? But that's how – and then he went on and he was in a WrestleMania. I mean, look, he didn't make it because of me, but I didn't hurt him any.
Yeah, no. And, you know, Owen was quite the ribber. Did he pull any ribs backstage while he was there?
Well, not that I'm aware of. See, okay. To me, unless they did it in front of me, I will never attest to something that somebody said something happened.
Okay.
I never saw anything. He knew I was not a games player. Okay. When I ran the back, think about this one. I was the promoter and I was usually wearing a tuxedo. And for the first couple of shows, I was doing the ring announcing. And after that, I just wore the tux. Larry Winters was my booker. What the hell would anybody listen to me for? I never wrestled a day in my life. Okay. So I wanted to have a wrestler doing the booking. And so Larry Winters was my booker. And I worked the front. I would meet with Larry before the shows, you know, weeks before, and say, look, here's what I'm trying to run. Think about this one. All the shows, the big shows I ran, were all 13 weeks apart. Okay, they were 4 year. So in 13 weeks, I had to go sell 1,500 to 2,500 tickets, get sponsors, get the matches lined up. Back in those days, it was easier. Without television, without cell phones, okay, without text messaging. Today, I text message guys. They don't get back to me for 3 weeks.
Yeah, I know that feeling. Before that, it was email. And if you didn't get a response, you'd send another. And then after a couple, you'd get the hint. But,
well, you know what? See, I don't take a hint. When you eventually hear the show that we're putting together for May 3rd, and I will be able to tell you stories about, I'll say, almost every one of the matches. Okay. Some of them, the wrestlers were in. And then others resisted it, and they all hold out for X number of dollars. And then others just wouldn't return a damn freaking phone call. Okay? And it's frustrating. And here's what's amazing. What does one do? And maybe you can answer this, because what does one do that doesn't have my reputation? All right? My reputation was my checks cleared. My reputation was I overpaid. And they still don't return my phone calls.
I don't know. I don't have an answer.
I don't have an answer either.
So when it came to TWA and all the legends and everything, I'm going to bring up one name in particular. Did you ever think about or had thought about bringing in Mr. Hughes?
No. Now, I'll tell you what. Hughes, the name had approached me. Actually, I'll tell you what. If I'm not mistaken, it was actually Jim Cornette that was trying to get me to get Hughes. I had hit a wall by the time Hughes came on the scene. I had hit a wall where if they weren't going to sell me tickets, it just wasn't going to be worth the aggravation. Okay. And my first early shows, I had the Adrian Streets and Jimmy Valiant. Nobody was buying a ticket to see them. And then my last show, which is the show that didn't happen, was the show that I was going to actually have Buddy Rogers and Buddy Landell in the Battle of the Nature Boys. And my original game plan was to have Ric Flair on the show, okay, as to work that whole angle. And then Ric Flair signed up with WCW or whoever it was, WWE. But no, Hughes was one. I never spoke to Hughes. I'll give you a story, okay? You ready for this one?
Yeah.
I get a phone call. Now, this is early on. I had Chris Adams and Kevin Von Erich in a tag match on my show against Austin Idol and Al Perez. That was an expensive match, okay? I get a phone call out of nowhere, because keep in mind, we didn't have cell phones back then, and you didn't have caller ID and all this. I get a phone call, and a ruffled guy, okay, says to me, and I can't do his accent because otherwise you'd get it. He says to me, Joel, I'm trying to use his voice. I want to work for you for nothing. And I said, okay, you want to give me a hint who you are? And he said, not yet, but I want to work for you for nothing. I said, then I'll get you on my card. Where am I flying you in from? He says, Texas. I said, okay, well, it's going to cost me $600 to fly in, and you're not going to sell me any tickets. Well, as it turned out, I never wound up booking him. The name, Stunning Steve Austin, ring a bell? I turned down Stunning Steve Austin.
What?
Yep. And it was funny because back then he was Stunning Steve Austin with the blonde hair. He was in Stone Cold. But I turned him down.
Wow.
One of my many failures, okay, that for whatever reason I turned him down.
Wow. That's something you don't hear every day.
Well, you know, it's funny. In writing the book, so here's what I learned. I'm not going to lie. I got enough stories. Hey, guess what? Somebody else would have made the same mistake I did. Somebody would have said, come on up for free. We'll figure it out. Okay. Chris Adams didn't call me and tell me he's going to call. He just called me out of nowhere.
Wow.
And Chris Adams trained him. So, yep, I turned him down.
Wow. Holy.
There you go. I
cannot believe that. That is.
Well, and to this day, if I ever saw him, and I've never met him, if I ever saw him, I'm convinced that his whole gimmick was taken off of Sandman. And Sandman's whole gimmick wasn't mine because I came up with the Sandman the Beach Bum. Okay.
Yeah.
But my wrestling school, it was me, Larry Winters, and Ron Shaw. We trained Sandman and lo and behold created Stone Cold Steve Austin, a direct lineage. I'm convinced of it.
Wow. That's stuff you don't hear.
I bet you didn't expect this kind of interview.
No, not at all, to be honest with you. Wow.
Yep.
I'm pretty shocked. Now
it's one story. Here, I'll give you another story, okay? One of my matches that I have at the Civic Center, it's actually on YouTube, is Abdul the Butcher against the original Sheik. Okay? Now, clearly, by when I got to Sheik, he was done. I mean, he was basically done. I get Sheik. How did I get Sheik? He called me. Okay? I went to Abby. I told him I wanted to get to Sheik. Abby said, Sheik, give Joel a call. And he gave me a call. Well, again, the long and short of this is, he calls me. We work out the numbers. And then he tells me I have one problem. I don't fly. So I need to be driven in. Will you cover my gas? I said, yeah, sure. Who was the driver?
I'm going to hope Sabu.
Correctamundo. Now, keep in mind, Sabu wrestled in the middle part of the country way before me.
Yeah.
But Sabu came and worked for me twice in Royal Rumbles kind of scenarios, Ringmaster Wrestling School Rumble, that kind of thing, Battle Royals. He worked for me first. Okay? And then, of course, he went on to bigger and better things. All right? But Sabu was the nephew of the original Sheik. And so he drove him in. I said, might as well use you.
Yeah.
There you go. And I see Abdul all the time. And in fact, I saw Abby about 3 months ago. He was in Atlantic City to receive a Hall of Fame Honors Award. And I spent about 2 hours with him just talking old times. And, oh my God, I could tell you stories about Abby that would scare you. That would scare you. He beat the living hell out of me one time. It's on YouTube. I was in my tuxedo. He knocked me down, kicked the hell out of me. gave me a headbutt, the whole 9 yards. Yep.
Wow.
And then I had to go pay him.
You know, a lot of these wrestlers that we've brought up and have talked about, as you just even said, Abby's in the Hall of Fame. You've gotten the nod recently for Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there's an organization down here called the ECWA, and I was Joel Blackheart for a couple of years in that heel manager, if you will. And Ryan, who runs it, called me up one day and says, "I want to put you in the Hall of Fame." And I said, "Sure, no problem." So I was put into the ECWA Hall of Fame. The last Hall of Fame that I attended was not mine. DC Drake was entered into the New England Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. And I had a driver. I don't drive anymore for a million reasons, but I had a driver drive me up 5.5 hours to Rhode Island to the event, saw DC get nominated, put into the Hall of Fame. He acknowledged me from the stage. And then I took 5.5 hour ride home. I did a 13-hour trip.
Wow.
Because in my mind, DC made me. Okay. And if he was going to get entered into the Hall of Fame, I wanted to be there for him.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's truly incredible.
It's a bond. It's a bond. I think back, I'll talk about DC Drake for a second. He did things for me, for my promotion, that I have no right in the world to ever ask anybody to do. And I found since that I didn't even ask him. Some of the stuff he did on his own. Okay? But if I grew, they grew. And DC and Larry Winters, because that was a feud beyond belief. I said to them, every show I have, they're on. Unless you can find other work somewhere else, or if you can't make it, I'm putting you on every card I have. I'll have some feeder match. And that worked for me because I had Tony Stetson and Johnny Hotbody. I could put them on any show anywhere. I could put DC Drake, Larry Winters on any show anywhere. I could put Jimmy Jannetty, Glenn Osborne anywhere. I could put Sandman and JT Smith anywhere. Those were four main event matches. Okay? And that's not even – I mean, I had Tony Stetson with Michael Bruno and tag match. I mean, I could go down the whole list. I had on every one of my big shows, I had 8 main events. Okay? And I used to have a philosophy. My first match on a show – was one of the best matches on the card. So what I did is I started up here, came down, and then took it back up to the main event. Okay? One of my first matches I had was Al Perez against Stan Lane. I mean, I can go, you know, the one thing I used to hate is if you have a 7:30 bell time, you better be at my show at 7:29. Because when the show starts, it's a show. From beginning to end, and I wanted people who got there late to realize they screwed themselves. They missed something.
Yeah.
Okay? And I've done that. I did that for years. I always wanted my main event, even if it was local guys, I wanted them to kill each other. I mean, come on. I had a match, right? I had a 6-man tag. This was in PWI Magazine. I had Johnny Hotbody as one of the tags. Anyway, the pins were counting anywhere in the building. Johnny Hotbody got pinned against the wall. Not the floor, not the ring. When you say pins count anywhere in the building, why do you not count the walls? I had a match where they had the pin against the wall.
Wow. That is definitely thinking outside the box.
If I didn't do outside the box, you wouldn't be talking to me 32 years later.
That is fair enough. Now, with TWA came in the later part, I believe, Todd Gordon, and you had met a young Paul Heyman. So what was it like to, you know Paul, and what was it like to work with Todd?
Okay. Well, that was a show unto itself. Okay.
Yeah.
Paul Heyman worked on my first show as a manager. He worked on my second and third show as a manager. He did nothing more for me than match. Okay. So I've never seen the more recent Paul Heyman. Okay. For me, he was always Paulie Dangerously. Okay. And I got to know him through Memphis. And again, a whole long story. Todd Gordon was an advertiser on my radio show. The story now goes, he has a company in Philadelphia called Carver W. Reed at 10th and Sam Street in Philly. And he approached me because he was a hardcore wrestling fan. He was going through the dial one Saturday morning and he heard my show. And he called me up. And anyway, long story short, I made him an advertiser on my radio show. Then when he became an advertiser, of course, here's my tickets to my show. I mean, I was going to charge him for tickets. And he was connected to the Variety Club, a children's charity in Philadelphia, which is actually international. Anyway, long story long, I got involved with Todd to the point where Todd got me nominated to the board of directors of the Variety Club. And you had a picture of me getting to be appointed to the board. It was a 3-year stint, if I remember correctly. My hair was 13 inches long, and I'm sitting there with a bunch of suits and ties. Okay. But they all got the connection. And for me, what really worked out well for me is when I was running my shows at Temple, Temple University called me and said, look, we're going to need to get some insurance. So I said, okay, I was going to go call my insurance broker, get the insurance. And Todd actually came up with the idea, let's use Variety Club's insurance. It's a big umbrella. And you'll pay us as a fundraiser. And that's what we did. And one thing led to the other. When I went under, I didn't tell Todd to pick it up where I left off. He, Larry Winters, Bob Ortiz, and I've heard 3 or 4 different stories about who made what call to who. But the reality is, I had all the people in place. I was just, for me, financially, I was burned out. I wound up losing $168,000. Now, that was when $168,000 was real money.
Yeah. Okay.
Today it's still real money, but back in the 80s and 90s, that was real money.
Yeah.
Okay. And I lost money because I had the radio show. I had the Ringmasters Wrestling School. I had the shows. I was drawing $30,000, $35,000 gates for an independent card that cost me $32,000 to put on. Okay. So I didn't do it for the money, quite frankly. If I did, I can guarantee you we wouldn't be talking about my matches today.
And if you did it for the money, no one wants to lose money personally.
I didn't want to lose it, but I had a ball.
Yeah.
You know, there is a point where you sit back and say, you know, I want to make money. I certainly don't want to lose money, but if I'm going to lose money, let me at least enjoy it. You know, and I'm telling you, I was a super fan. When you came to my shows, my handwriting was all over the show, all over. From the first match to the last match, even we had a young girl sing God Bless America at the beginning of each of my big quarterly shows. She was 9 years old at the time, came off of Star Search. To be honest, I'm not sure whatever happened to her. But that was the first thing. Everybody stood up. We sang God Bless America. That was part of my tradition. Okay. It's weird. She didn't cost me any money. Okay. But everything else that I did, there was a price tag to it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you had said earlier that you had taken a hiatus from even, you know, watching wrestling.
Yeah.
Did you at least keep up in any way with former students of yours or workers of yours?
Zero. Now, I will tell you, from 1992, when I went under, January 18th of 92, to 2009, zero. I'm not even now. I even to the point of I burned my phone book. Okay, all the phone numbers I had, Flair's phone number, gone. Okay. Then when I went back, true story, when Mike Bruno decided to use the TWA initials for the show, it was at a building in South Jersey called the Flyer Skate Zone. And he said to me, why don't you come to the matches? And again, I hadn't been to the matches in 17 years. And I went, and I swear to God to you, all my three kids, I sat in my car. I sweated bullets. I was scared to death to go in because I didn't know what the reaction would be to the wrestlers. I walked in the door. Larry Winters, may he rest in peace. Larry Winters meets me at the door. Thank God you're here. We were hoping you showed up. He did everything but kiss my feet. He takes me in, and the second person I meet is this one and that one. If I remember correctly, Mike Kalua was there, Tom Brandy was there, and they all were just ecstatic to see me. Sonny was there. Chris Candido was there. I was scared. I swear to God, I was scared to death. Okay. And then on the second show, he had me go in the ring to do something, which I don't recall. He had me go in. I went into the ring. I almost tripped over the damn ropes. Okay. I mean, it was just, I didn't know. And that's before Sonny had her reputation. You know, Chris can't. Now, think about this one. I had in one of my Bar Wars shows, which I got pretty well known for. These Bar Wars were phenomenal. I had Chris Candido on one of my cards, and I threw Sonny out of the dressing room. I didn't need it. I didn't need her at. It was a lot of stuff, okay? And I just didn't need her to be there.
Yeah.
And I threw her out. I asked her not to come out.
How did she react to that?
She reacted. It sounds crazy, but I think it was actually a sign that she was being accepted, because I had seen her later at some of Rob Feinstein's Icons, and we were friendly. We were friendly. You know, we never kept in touch. When I would see it now, of course, I don't see her at all. But I saw her. We said hello. We're cordial.
Now, when you look back and you hear about a lot of the wrestlers that you had on your shows and them having success, how happy were you to hear about Sabu's success and Sandman's success and JT?
What power to them? Well, Steve, it's weird. To be a wrestler, if you're going to be successful, it's on your own merit. Okay, yeah, I gave him a break. Yeah, I gave him a paycheck. Yeah, I gave him a push. Okay, the reality is the reason Sabu made his money is not because of me. Okay, the reason Sandman, yeah, okay, I had everything to help him get started. But you want to know something? Sam made it because of Sandman. All right, Jerry Lawler didn't need me, that's for sure. Eddie Gilbert didn't need me, that's for sure. Terry Funk certainly didn't need me, that's for sure. I had one of my matches at the Civic Center. I had Terry Funk against Jerry Lawler. Terry Funk was the former NWA champion, and Jerry Lawler was the former AWA champion. I mean, this is good stuff, okay? I can go down the list. I had Battle of the Bam Bams. I had Bam Bam Bigelow against Terry Gordy, okay? And one of my first shows. And now both of them are gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Luna Vachon. You got to understand, I love Luna. Okay. Her husband's fine. I love Luna. She would call me and we would have, I wish the hell I would have taped these damn conversations. Okay. We talk about angles and this and that and the other thing. And she was a Vachon. She didn't have to put me over in any way, shape, or form. I mean, she had a blood. Come on. She was a Vachon. And when she worked her matches with me and Medusa Michelli, okay, it was Medusa against her in a hair versus hair match. They had a mixed co-ed match with Cactus Jack and Eddie Gilbert. Oh my God, they just did. Come on. And I still see, I haven't seen Medusa in a while. I haven't, I'm a member of the Cauliflower Alley Club, and I was out there almost every year. And the last 3 years, I haven't been able to go due to health history. I'm going to go back next year, but I used to see Medusa there every year.
Yeah, and she's part of it with Brian Blair.
Oh, yeah. Well, Brian is the
Yeah.
president.
Yeah.
Okay. In fact, Rich Engling, who's one of the referees that's coming, going to be at my show, Rich Engling is, I think, a vice president there. But I'll tell you what's amazing to me, and here's a plug. It is amazing to me how many people are involved in the wrestling industry that A, are not a member of Cauliflower Alley Club and don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. It just drives me nuts. It's not that expensive. I'm a lifetime member. I think it's $400 to be a lifetime member. If you made money, you deserve to put up to $400 damn dollars.
Yeah, because they
It
do a
just
lot.
yeah, it drives me crazy. Trust drives me crazy.
Yeah,
But
because they do
that's
a
where,
lot.
yeah, in fact, this was now going back 4 years ago. I'm out there and some guy walks up to me. You'll know who, well, I'll tell you, it was Baron Von Raschke. And he and his wife come walking up to me, and he comes up to me. He does this and he says, "Why didn't you ever use me?" Now, I had never met him. He wanted to know why I didn't use him. And the answer, quite frankly, is I don't have a friggin' clue why I didn't use him. Okay? Because in hindsight, I would have loved to use him. But he wanted to give me the claw. Why didn't you ever use me?
Speaking of that, I actually have two fan questions that really stuck out to me that I would like to ask. And the first one comes from Chris Beshores. And because you just told that story, this one fits perfectly in there. Is there anyone that you didn't get to work with during your time with Tri-State Wrestling Alliance that you wish you would have?
Ric Flair. Okay, now Rick did a dinner for me. Rick and I had conversations. It just never happened. And I would have run the angle of angles of angles between Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, Nature Boy Buddy Landell, and Nature Boy Ric Flair. Oh my God. All right. And you got to understand, I'm very part Buddy Landell, another one. God bless him. Okay. He worked with me every way, which it was just unbelievable. And he came up with the angles for my entire the I was going to have a three match program between the three of them, and it just never happened. So Ric Flair, like I said, he never worked with me in TWA.
Okay. And the next fan question comes from Alex Todd. He would like to know if you could go back in time and change anything that you've done, what would it be and why?
I wouldn't have gotten out, but I would have had to cancel that last show. That was going to happen no matter what. I'll tell you another quick story. There used to be a wrestler in this area, another wrestler, I'm sorry, promoter, who's since passed away. His name is Dennis Caraluzzo. Okay, he was tied in with Larry Sharp and Monster Factory. And they used to run shows in South Jersey. And they would draw 100, 125, 150 people for the most part. They'd have no names, maybe one name. Every once in a while, they did a big show, but it was generally the exception, not the rule. And he made more money in wrestling than I did. Okay, now nobody's calling him. Now he's since passed away, but nobody's calling him asking about the matches that he had. Okay, or nobody's writing a book about, at least that I'm aware of, that about the matches that he had. Okay, but here I am 32 years later. So I think I went for, I wanted to be Vince McMahon, but doing it ethically. Okay. And when I started TWA, my goal was to get the best of Memphis, the best of Georgia, the best of Florida, the best of the Carolinas, the best of the Pacific Northwest, the best of the world class. And put them all together. And I succeeded. The problem was all those places required travel. I spent a fortune on airlines, hotels. Hey, in hindsight, I was a lousy businessman. On the other hand, that's the reason it worked. Okay. It's the reason it worked.
All right. I'd like to thank both of them for, you know, sending in questions. There was a lot. Those two stuck out the most to me, especially while we're, you know, having our conversation here. Now, I have one last question that I wanted to ask. And did you ever watch the match between Taz and Joel Hart Good?
No. No, and to this day, I still don't know who the wrestler was that did Joel Hart Good.
Okay.
Okay. And it's funny, I've asked a number of people. Okay. I never watched the match. And, you know, look, I realized that once you're in the ring, whatever gimmick they're giving you, that's what they give you. Okay.
Yeah.
Someday, I do talk to Todd once in a while. I will, and Todd thinks he's God, you know. So I will ask him. Who was Hart Good? Yep, I'll find out.
Okay. And I want to take this opportunity to let you address the fans with anything that you know, you want to say, or, you know, make note of, or, you know, again, rehash any news that we talked about tonight.
Yeah, no, I think the one thing I'd like to just put some emphasis on is the show on May 3rd, 2025. If I had any reputation at all, you will know that this is going to be one hell of a show. And if you're fortunate enough to be in attendance, you'll be glad you did. We are going to probably stream it. So for those of you who are out of the area who can't get to see it, you'll be able to see it on TV or however they do it. But again, I will always tell you, we did everything without television. Okay? You were either at my show or you weren't. Okay? So if you're watching this program, if you can make it to the show on May 3rd, come to the con, the WrestleCon before, you'll have a whole day. You want to talk about, I know some of the matches. I know most of the matches. Trust me when I tell you, I will not disappoint you. Okay, so if you are a hardcore wrestling fan, and if you think that you are, if you're a super fan, you've got to be at the 2300 Arena on May 3rd. Go online on October 5th, order your tickets, and I look forward. I will personally say thank you to each and every one of you. That's it, Lee.
And ladies and gentlemen, I will have all the links in the description for you to be able to purchase tickets. And if you're in upstate New York, shoot me a message and find out how you can be able to take a bus to this show on May 3rd. Now, you can also find all our other interviews, youtube.com/perched on the top rope. If you listen to us on Apple Podcast, we currently ranked third in the United States today. So for all of you who listen on app, third in the United States today.
Then before you go, you got to remind everybody to go sign on the banner, sign on Facebook, get your name on. We need 1,000 signatures to get that banner.
And ladies and gentlemen, I'll have the links to all of that, as well as you can find that information with Bay Regney and with Chubby Dudley. Same person, but two different social medias. I'll have all the links in the descriptions for you guys. And I would like to thank Bay Regney for setting this interview up. For without him, a lot of the stuff that you've heard would not have been, you know, this interview would not have happened. The banner with the 1,000 with the 1,000 signatures. So make sure you go and do all that when I put the link in the description. And fans, remember, spoiler freeze, the way to be. We're out.